Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to In for Life, the podcast. This is episode 252 called Ashton. This episode is brought to you by Therologix. If you've ever wondered what keeps your egg cells healthy and energized, here's a little science bomb for you. NAD+. It's a coenzyme in every single cell of your body, and your eggs need a lot of energy to mature properly. But here's the thing. NAD+ levels decline as we age, which can impact egg quality. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about OVA NAD+ by Therologix, the first NAD+ booster made specifically for ovarian health and egg quality. It combines nicotinamide riboside, a form of vitamin B your body can actually convert into NAD+, with pterostilbene, an antioxidant from blueberries and grapes. Together, they support your egg cells' energy production, protect DNA, and help keep your reproductive health strong as the years go by. And like all Therologix products, OVA NAD+ is independently tested, content certified, and has no hidden doses or proprietary blends. What's on the label is exactly what's in the bottle. Now here's the best part. You can save 15% right now at Therologix.com with code INFERTILEAF. Again, that's InfertileAF for 15% off at Therologix.com. And that's spelled Therologix.com. Thanks, Therologix. All right, guys, I'm so excited to announce that Fertility Rally Live number 10, this is our 10th one, is happening on November 14th. So if you don't know about Rally Live, it's a virtual event where we have breakout speakers, we have keynote speakers, we have two panels, we do giveaways all day, we pre-record all the talks, and then everybody comes together live to watch them all unfold. And Blair and I do giveaways, and we have a happy hour at the end of the day. You get a virtual swag bag with discounts and deals from some of our great brand partners, and it is just an awesome event. So this year's lineup includes Sarah Herron, who you guys probably know from The Bachelor and her infertility advocacy work. She is our keynote speaker. We have a panel from REIs in Texas at Texas Fertility Center. We have a panel all about surrogacy and intended parenthood. And we have 8 breakout sessions covering everything from finances and how to like squash your IVF and treatment medical bills to one on nutrition, the latest and the greatest from an expert in the nutrition field. And also we're talking about spirit babies and so much more. So it's a great event. It is such a great time. It's happening Friday, November 14th. And you can get the tickets at the link in my bio at InfertileAF Stories or at Fertility Rally. And just so you know, even if you can't come on the 14th, you have 30 days to watch everything. So we work really hard to put this together. It's for you guys. Come and support us and come and have a great time. Fertility Rally Live. Again, get the tickets at InfertileAF Stories or at Fertility Rally. There's links in both of those Instagram bios. Okay. Also, in route to my house right now is my third work of art book. It's a board book. It's called You Are a Work of Art, and it's for every kiddo that is born through assisted reproductive technology. So it's for IUI babies, IVF, surrogacy, embryo donation, donor conception, all the things. It is so cute. It's a board book, so it's different from the other two books, and it is going to be available for pre-order next week. So please go to infertileafgroup.com, which is my website. You can see the other two books, and you can see a sneak peek of You Are a Work of Art, and I hope you guys love it. It is quite possibly my favorite of the three books, so check it out. All right, so let's get to today's guest. Her name is Ashton, and she has been through so much, including 2 years of IVF treatments, countless shots, endless waiting. She's even traveled to both Greece and Australia to do treatment in the hopes of having a healthy baby. But after all that, guys, her positive pregnancy test didn't come from any of the treatments she was doing. It came from home. She used the Fertile at-home insemination kit. And today she's going to share her incredible journey and how she ended up at that point, how she even heard about Fertile, and she's going to talk about what kept her going and where she is today. So it's a really cool story. It's kind of a Fertile / Infertile AF, I guess, crossover baby is what she's calling it. which is really cool. So happy for her. But without further ado, this is Ashton's infertility story. Hi, Ashton. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for doing this. So we have so much to talk about, but I always like to start at the very beginning, which is, what did you know growing up about your fertility, having babies, like how hard it would be maybe to get pregnant or maybe not? Like, what was your sex education like?
So I grew up in a pretty rural area in Ohio. And like many previous guests, I think this is a pretty shared experience, like growing up in the 90s and early 2000s, like I didn't know anything. Like I didn't know how to put a tampon in until I was like 18, literally.
Really?
I
mean,
and I was scared. Yeah. Yeah. So most of my sex education came through like the public school system, which, you know, they're doing their best with the resources they have. But also there was like definitely a conservative sort of spin, I think, on all that, which, you know, again, I think is like a shared experience among most people. And then I was raised in like a Christian church. And so it was just like abstinence only, right? Mm-hmm. And there really was no education at all beyond like, don't do it, don't get pregnant, your life will be over, like end of story. Mm-hmm. And so it was, I mean, pretty limited, honestly. But when it came time to like try to have a family, I assume like most people, it would be easy. And it was not easy.
Right. Well, yeah, let's jump to that point in your timeline. Tell me about, you know, starting to try and what that looked like for you in your life.
Yeah. So I always like, I didn't think I wanted to have kids for a long time, like for a long, long time. And I got to the point in my early 30s where I thought, okay, like I knew I was getting older, but it didn't really compute that I may not have fertility forever. And even like earlier today, I was listening to a podcast Allison Janney was on, and she's like, I thought you could have kids till your 50s. Like, that's not really accurate.
She said that?
Yeah, she did. It was on Monica Lewinsky's podcast.
Oh my God, I love Monica Lewinsky's podcast.
Literally this morning. Yeah, I was like, oh, like how timely.
That's great. I got to go listen to that.
Totally. It was a good episode. She's a good listen. So they both are. But yeah, so I just like, there was a point where in my early 30s, I thought, okay, like, I don't need to have like a baby. I don't need to have little kids. I don't need to have like teenagers, but I want adult children. And I was smart enough to go, okay, like that requires a family. Like, right. And there's a million ways to get there, but I did think, okay, I probably want my own kids. That's cool. Uh-huh. So that was like early 30s. And then I'd been married like, you know, I don't know, 7 years by that point. And family just started to like give up. They were thinking like, they're never having kids. Like Ashton and Grant are going to just like be the cool, like, dual income, no kid people forever. But secretly, we were like, yeah, we want to like have a family eventually.
Had you and Grant talked about what your family was going to look like? And were you guys actively trying or not yet?
Oh, no. Oh, no. And in fact, we had like one scare in like 10 years. And I knew right then and there, it was in 2020. I was like, I'm not ready for this. Like, I definitively knew I'm not ready for this. And by that point, I was what, like 31, 32, which, looking back, I'm like, wow, should have like started then. Like,
jumped on it. Yes.
Yeah. Should have jumped on it then. But, and Grant was definitely ready, more ready than I was, earlier than I was. So we moved to Australia back in 2023. I kind of knew like when we get there, I think I want to start trying at some point, but there still like was not a firm timeline. I was just living life, enjoying being married. I didn't need anything else. Honestly, kids were going to feel like a bonus.
Is he Australian? Is that why you were there?
No. Okay. He's actually in med school. It's a long story, but there's like a program that's on both continents. Like it's in New Orleans. It's like half in New Orleans and half in Australia. Yeah. So we're in New Orleans now.
Okay.
Yeah. And we kind of joked about like going abroad and then not telling anyone we were trying and not telling anyone like if we got pregnant and just like showing back up with a baby. Like we kind of joked about that. But beyond that, we didn't have any firm plans. And then literally one day, like July of 2024, 2023. I mean, quite literally, I like woke up one day and was like, now is the time. Like I felt a sense of urgency I had never felt. I felt a sense of desire I had never felt. And it really was just like, okay, now. And I went and got my IUD out like 2 weeks later.
Why do you think that happened? Did you have like a dream or something, or just like what instigated that?
So interestingly enough, being that my husband's in med school. He's surrounded by a bunch of like medical and medical adjacent people. And I did have a couple friends who worked at a fertility clinic. Actually, it was very unusual, but one worked at a fertility clinic in the Bay Area and the other one was a patient there. And they're both now like in school together at med school. And they were talking about fertility a decent amount. And it just had never really been on my radar at all. And like I said, I kind of assume like, you can have a baby in your 40s. It's fine. Right. You can have one in your mid to late 30s. It'll be fine. Like, so yes. I think all of us, just all that information started slowly coming at me. And then for whatever reason, I literally was just like, okay, now is the time. And Grant was like, yeah, for sure. Like, I've been waiting for you to be ready.
Okay. So you took out your IUD and then what happened?
And then nothing happened. I mean, honestly, and it's really funny because I think I'm a pretty intuitive person. And by September, so like 2-3 months later, I was like, I don't think this is going to work. Like, it was very fast. And I don't really have like a good reason to explain that. But I just, you know, you get into the weeds of like, you're tracking your cycles and you're doing all the things. And I had lost some weight. So I'm like, okay, I'm like, you know, I'm like optimizing my health. I'm in the sun all the time. I'm walking everywhere in Australia. Like, I'm doing all the right things. And I just had this by September, October, I had this sinking feeling of like, I don't think this is going to work. I had no rhyme or reason. There wasn't like any infertility in my family. Like, I didn't have a health condition that made me worry about it. I had no information at that point. And I still like, I didn't know anything about like my body. I didn't know anything about what my cycle really was doing in the phases. Like, you have no clue. And so the learning curve is just steep. But by the time I started to put everything together and at that point, coincidentally, my cycles had gotten pretty short about the same time I got my IUD out. And I thought it's probably getting my IUD out. That's what I thought it was, but it was a copper one. And that doesn't really like affect that very much.
So what did that look like for you after, you know, in that September, did you start doing research? Were you like, I need to go see a specialist. I need to talk to people that have gone through this.
I'm definitely, so at that point we hadn't told anybody we were trying either. And I kind of wanted to keep it a secret, I guess. I didn't want to say anything to anybody. So nobody knew. And I did a little Googling, and Grant, my husband, is not super informed, but like maybe more informed than the average male. And he said like, yeah, normally like in your early 30s, I was 34 at the time, like you try a year. And I'm a rule follower. And I was just like, okay, I'm not going to like pursue anything for a year. Which is so dumb. Like, looking
it's not
back,
dumb if you're a rule follower and that's what they tell you to do. I get it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm always dispelling that though to people now these days. I'm like, don't wait a year. How do they know how long you've been trying? You know, you can tell them it's been a year if you want to get in sooner.
Totally. And your ovaries don't know that you're going to be, you're 34, almost 35. Like, I understand why there's a cutoff. Like, there just needs to be, like, practically speaking. But also it's like, come on. I wish I would have investigated a little bit earlier. But that being said, I had to have my gallbladder out. And like, there were some other little things in there where I was like, okay, this maybe is not the right time to like pursue this. We had some visitors coming. And so I was just like, okay, I'll wait till July. So June rolls around. And so this is June of 2024. And I was frustrated. That's a nice way to put it. And, you know, we didn't tell anybody except for a couple close friends at that point.
Right.
And that feels like an eternity.
Had it had an effect on your relationship with Grant?
Honestly, not at all. In fact, I would say if anything, the like whole, just from start to finish, this, it really has been like, it is enhanced our relationship, which is very like backwards to say.
That's great.
Not to say there weren't dark moments in there, but like together, we're definitely better.
Yeah. I love to hear that.
Yeah.
As anyone knows who's listening, that was not the case with me.
Yeah. And I can see how this could, I could see how this could go the other way super easily.
Yeah.
It's so stressful, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So what happened next?
So that was June of 2024. And so I'm in Australia, we're in Brisbane, and healthcare there, no shade to the US, it's quite a bit better than healthcare here. So I easily got into a fertility specialist and he's just like, look, you're going to be 30 or was I 30? No. Yeah. I was 35 at that point. No, I was 34. Sorry. I was 34 at that point still. And he's like, you know, like it's given. So I found out my AMH was low. Very low. And that was
from this like hot Australian doctor.
Totally.
I'm just assuming everyone from Australia is good looking.
Nailed it. I mean, at least close your eyes and he sounds really nice.
Right.
But that was a huge shock. huge shock. And it's one of the, it's this moment where you're kind of like, this didn't happen overnight. And you start thinking back to like the one time we had a pregnancy scare in my early 30s. And I'm like, maybe that was the time. And mm-hmm. I just get so frustrated because I went to the OBGYN like I was supposed to. I got my yearly routine, you know, checkups, all that. And not once was I ever asked, like, hey, you're not old, but like, hey, you're about to be 30 or you're around 30. Like, wow. Would you care for any information at all about your fertility?
I've heard that so many times, Ashton, and same with me. Yeah. And, you know, I really wish that it was more part of just the regular checkups, you know, like mm-hmm. checking in and maybe you should think about this. And at this age, this might happen, you know, just kind of giving people a baseline. So, you know, that's obviously part of the reason that I do this show and all the other stuff is just trying to get the word out for people coming after us, like educate yourself. It's not as easy as you think it is, you know, all the things.
For sure. And like now that I am way more educated than I was 2 years ago, like I understand that there is a small battery of tests that one could do to know in, you know, generic terms like, hey, your fertility is pretty good. You're probably okay. Or like, hey, maybe freeze some eggs or hey, like this is more of a, you know, urgent situation than you probably realize. I had no idea. My AMH was like the second percentile for my age. Mm-hmm. And I had absolutely no physical signs of that except for my cycle shortening, but how would you know? How mm-hmm. would one know, you know,
right.
without
okay.
giving the information? Yeah.
So what was the diet? Like, did they give you an official diagnosis aside from the low AMH and what were the next steps? Like, what did they tell you to do?
Yes. No. So there wasn't really a diagnosis. It was like a lot of people where it's just kind of like unexplained infertility, but also it's probably, I don't have very many eggs and it's probably they're not great quality. So mm-hmm. IUI was offered and like many of your guests, I want to do the quickest thing and I want to do the most efficient thing. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm not spending a bunch of money on IUI. Like it feels like IVF anyway, because you have to do labs and you still have to get scanned. And like, why would I bother? And quite frankly, at that point, the cost of IUI felt large enough that I felt like it was potentially going to be not a waste, but that's just kind of how I viewed it.
And so yeah.
I want to do IVF right now.
So like, did you have any coverage, insurance coverage?
No.
No.
None.
Okay. So yes, it's because some people, when you do have insurance coverage, you have to do a certain number of IUIs first before the mm-hmm. insurance will cover IVF. So
right.
This was not the case for you.
Correct.
Okay.
And even back in the States, I am 95%. I've never lived in a state that mandated coverage from insurance for IVF or, you know, IUI, any of that. So I kind of knew when we moved back, which I knew we were moving back. So this was like June in November. We were going to come back in November. And I was just like, I'm not going to be covered in the States anyway. And the cost of IVF in Australia is significantly less than it is in the States. Yeah.
Fucking Australia.
Exactly. I know. Why did I move back? So we just went straight to IVF and it was actually a decent cycle. 7 follicles, 5 eggs. It's really cute. I don't know how clinics in the States do it, but the doctor writes the number of eggs you got on your hand. So when you wake up from surgery, you just look at
yes.
your hand. And I was like,
they did that at my clinic as well.
I love that. I was like, so fun. And we were really optimistic. You know, you think it's going to work. You think science is on my side.
Totally.
Like science can do anything. And so I just kind of like assumed like, I'm going to do a cycle. I'm going to have a baby. It's going to be
right.
very A plus B equals C, right? 1, 2, 3.
Totally.
And that's not how it was. We ended up getting 2 embryos out of that cycle. The first one we did a fresh transfer, which, you know, this is like slightly controversial. Would I do that again? Maybe, maybe not, but mm-hmm. we were moving back too. And so I was kind of worried about having embryos in storage on another continent. So there's like all these other factors at play. Yeah. And this is September by this point. We're moving back in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, 2 embryos. That kind of worked out. Would have liked.
Did you ever think about putting both of them in at once? Or was that not
it was
policy?
Not offered.
I mean, clinics are, every clinic is different.
Yeah. It was suggested that we do not. I don't think there was like a hard, no, we won't do it. But no. And I kind of wanted 2 shots, I guess. It's kind of how I saw it at the time. And I have twin sisters, which I love. Like, I just cannot imagine being pregnant with twins. So I also was like, oh, I don't think so. Just on the off chance that that would happen. So yeah. So we transferred the first one, made a big hoopla out of it, did a staycation in Brisbane. Like, it was delightful and it didn't work. Right.
Mm.
As it often does. or does not, I should say. And so that was obviously like a new level of devastation, because again, you just think like, this is going to work. This has to work, right? It has to work. And then fast forward just the next month, they were like, hey, we can transfer again. We'll do a frozen cycle. That's cool. I'm like, great, let's do it. This is October of 24 at that point. And so I told my husband, I'm like, you're good. I can do this by myself. Like, I'm cool. I get to the clinic. I'm sitting there. The waiting room is empty and no one's coming to get me. And it's been like 45 minutes. And I'm like, this feels weird. And they come to get me and they take me not to the right room for the transfer, but to another room. And I knew that the embryo did not survive the thaw. And it's one of those. Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, intellectually, you know, all these bad things can happen. You hear about them happening to other people. You know, but there is just no way to prepare yourself for something like that.
And you never think it's going to happen to you.
No, of course not. You don't.
Right.
And then instant, thank you. I appreciate that. So like in an instant, it's done. And we're about to move back. So yeah, there's time for another cycle. But then I have this whole question of like, okay, then what do I do with any embryos we have? Do I want to go to Australia to transfer embryos? That sounds crazy. So I just said, you know what? That's cool. Shut the door on that. And honestly, I wasn't overly like distraught about IVF in general, because I really thought, okay, we didn't think we'd get that many eggs. We didn't know if we'd get that many embryos given everything. So I was like, okay, this is okay. We can work with this. We just need to do this again. And I was pretty resolved that we were going to make IVF work. Okay. So we move back. Well, actually, we don't move back. I immediately am like, we cannot afford IVF in the US. We can't do it. And I knew that with my AMH, we wanted to bank some embryos. Mm-hmm. So we were planning on doing banking instead. So we're talking like, you know, a couple cycles in 2025. Uh-huh. And my husband's in med school. Like, who has 25, whatever, $1,000?
I thought you were going to say, he could just do it. We don't need
to. Yeah, right. REI. Just do it at home.
Wait, sorry. This just popped in my head. I should have asked before, but what was the financial difference between Australia versus the US? You know, I love to be transparent about this kind of stuff so people know.
For sure. So the cycle fee itself, which included my first fresh transfer, all my labs, like the consultant fee, which in Australia is like your fertility specialist, that was like the equivalent of $12,000 USD. Mm-hmm. So quite a bit less than the US, but then the meds were about $2,000 USD. So quite a bit less. So like $14,000 all in. And of course I didn't get charged for the frozen transfer. That didn't happen. So
okay. Like
$14,000
right, all in. Compared to what was your research on IVF in the States just when you were doing it?
I mean, I was thinking anywhere from 20 to 30. And then, you know, if you have a bunch of embryos per transfer, you're looking at what, $5,000 a transfer, something crazy. So you could just see how that would add up. I think the frozen transfer fee was like 2,500 or 3,000 USD. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So quite a bit less still.
Right.
But that really like empowered me to be like, I can do better. prices. Honestly, I thought, you know, people all over the world do IVF with success. Why can't that be me? Running the numbers, I was like, it's actually going to cost me less. And I'm thinking I'm going to be less like stressed if I'm not trying to work a full-time job and do IVF at the same time if I just go abroad. So I didn't even consider doing it in the US. I just was like, nope, that idea is out the window. Totally.
So interesting. So what was the plan? Where are you going?
So I looked into, you get on Reddit, you get on Facebook groups, you start in the trenches looking for information. And I saw a lot of people were going to Spain, some people were going to Turkey, and a lot of people were going to Greece. And I was like, okay, I've actually never been to Greece, fairly well traveled, but never been there. And when I started looking, there is a huge community of people.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
People of couples trying to conceive from North America, from the UK. I met a girl from Fiji. You know, going to Greece basically as medical tourists, I suppose, okay. to do IVF. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so very vibes-based approach. I'm very quick with decisions. Like, I don't need it. I need information, but I don't need all the information to make decisions, which is probably
yes,
not great.
I feel like I'm like kind of like that too. Yeah, I can appreciate that.
But I did two consults. Actually, I did one in the Czech Republic, like a virtual one, and then one in Thessaloniki, like northern Greece. And I was just like, yep, I like them. That's what I'm going to do. And so we moved back from Australia in November, had like a month. Actually, sorry, in December, we went to the clinic because my husband's in med school. He can't just like be with me, go, you know, give his sample whenever. Like, that's just not going to work. So right. he left a frozen sample in Greece in oh, wow. December. Yep. And then we came back to the States, moved to New Orleans in January, like 6th or something. And then in the beginning of January, I went back by myself and I basically committed to what I thought was going to be one cycle. You know, again, I thought it was going to work. I thought it was going to work. So went for a cycle and 4 days into my first cycle, it was canceled because I did not respond to the meds at all.
Oh, wow.
And I was using the exact same protocol we used in Australia because my outcome was pretty good, except for having, you know, a live birth that didn't happen.
Was there any explanation for what happened?
No. So we redrew my AMH, looked at my labs, and my fertility doctor was like, listen, not to be alarmist, but to be alarmist, I am pretty sure you're in basically a period of decline right now, more or less. And we would not expect this outcome not even six months from your last cycle. So he basically said, as much as you can, you should bank embryos now, because I don't know basically if you're going to respond at all in 6 months or a year.
Wow.
And that scared me. It really scared me. Like it was a lot. And no less, I'm by myself. Like I'm in Greece by myself.
Did you just like find an apartment or an Airbnb or like how did I want to hear the logistics of that?
Yeah, I did. I got an Airbnb in Thessaloniki. And honestly, like I had as good of a situation as I could have there. And thank God there's plenty of Facebook groups. Like I met people in real life. I made friends, a couple Canadians coming to the clinic, a couple Americans coming to the clinic, the girl from Fiji. So I had people coming and going because we haven't gotten here yet, but I was there pretty much 3 months this year.
Wow. Okay.
Doing IVF. Yeah. So that was cycle number one. And obviously that was devastating because I had put my life on hold. I was supposed to start a job in February. Right. And I'm like, never mind. Like, I've got to
be in Greece. So this is your full-time job at this point?
Oh, 100%. Wow. Yeah. And the clinic basically said, hey, like, we don't recommend you go home right now. They're like, jet lag and all that stuff. Like, if you can stay, we suggest you stay. And at that point, I already had, like, housing. And I'm like, okay, I'll just stay. So I, like, went to Cyprus and, like, whatever. But it was miserable. Like, I was in a dark place. The darkest place of my life, and just trying to manage all of my emotions and everything going on by myself. And really with like the time discrepancy, like I would have appointments at 10 in the morning and get terrible news. And like, Grant's not awake. Nobody that knows I'm in Greece.
Right.
Like, is available to
like, oh my God, that's so tough. You're like, where's the girl from Fiji?
Literally. Yeah. And by that point, I didn't really have friends quite yet. Yeah. So luckily I had a coordinator of the clinic who was really just like phenomenal. And like one day she pulled me into her office and shut the door and let me cry. And like, you know, so there were really wonderful people just all around. But ultimately the situation was not good. But I was resolved, like, I am doing this now. This is my opportunity. Once I come back to the States and get a, like, life goes back to normal, I'm not going to be able to do this. This is my window of opportunity. I really felt like that. And so I thank God had friends. I had friends that came for a week at the end of February. End of January. So I was there for about a month by myself. They left. I started a cycle, cycle number two. And I had one follicle. It was terrible.
Wow.
I had
one.
But that whole time I just reminded myself, like, it only takes one. I only need one kid. That's cool. Like I would, if this was the one follicle, like
right.
it was written in the stars, I would be thrilled with that.
Yep.
So that was all good. We did a retrieval and we got one mature egg. And at this point, we have a 3-day, 7-cell, 3-day, one little itty bitty embryo in the freezer in Greece. So I'm like, okay, that's not enough, obviously. Like, that's crazy. You know, they tell you what, 3 to 4 embryos per live birth. And these aren't genetically tested. You cannot test a 3-day embryo. And the laws in Greece are such where you have to get special government permission to even test your embryos.
Wow, really? Government permission?
Government permission. Uh-huh. It is. I have a friend that goes and she's got like a translocation imbalance or something like that.
Okay.
And they had to get like, they had to get like approval from like the ministry of something or other. Yeah, it's this whole ordeal.
Got it.
Yeah. So I came home for a week. We bought a house. I signed some papers, looked around New Orleans for a week and then went back for another cycle. By that point, you know, I just, again, was just like locked into the idea that we're going to make this happen. I don't know how, but you know, we're going to keep going. And I thought through the end of the summer, so like August, I was like, let's just see what happens with as many cycles as I can.
Okay.
So cycle 3 was what felt like a disaster. I had 7 follicles. They were all over the place. I had a cyst. Some were growing, some were not, some were growing too fast. Like it was just bad. And at this point they had backed me off meds to like a very low level because with only one follicle from the last cycle, they're just like, there's no point in giving you, you know, all these meds basically. And they were worried about quality. So anyways, I had 7 follicles by the point of retrieval, which came really fast. They looked good. And I go in for my retrieval. And I am in, you know, the position, you're in the chair.
Right. Yep. In the stirrups.
You're laying back. You're ready to go. You're like, finally, we're here. Anesthesiologist is about to put the line in. And the doctor, who's not my doctor, because my doctor was off, is like, hey, I just want to do a quick scan. I'm like, totally cool. Let's do it. So they scanned me and I had ovulated and everything was gone.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, how did that feel at that moment?
It's another one of those things where you know intellectually it is a possibility.
Right.
And you see enough, if you've done this even once, you've seen enough ultrasounds, you know what you're looking for. So the second that they stuck the probe, you know, the thing up there,
the wand.
The magic wand, the medical dildo up there. I saw nothing. I knew that there was nothing there. And it was like the most dead I've ever felt inside. I was just shocked. I don't know how else to explain it. I just was like, okay, like I was so calm about it in the moment. I don't know how. I was just like, okay, yep, thanks. I see that. Like that's, and I just got up and walked out of the OR.
Oh my God. I would have been like a puddle on the floor.
Listen,
it hit you later.
It did. I was very good about keeping it together. Like in front of, I don't know, these people I didn't know. But the second I stepped out of the clinic, I was just like, I kind of felt like it was over. Like I really did. I was just like, what else? Not only what else can go wrong, but you start kind of believing that you're having bad luck. And then you finally kind of, it sunk in like bad luck when it happens this much, like it's more than bad luck. Like something is not going right.
Right.
Something's not going right. And I don't think it had anything to do with the clinic or the meds. I really was like, it's me. And not like it's me like personally, but like it's my body. Like,
yes.
this is not working.
I've heard people say before that they felt like cursed, you know, like they've had so many bad things happen in a row. And it's like, this cannot be possible. How is this happening?
And you hear other people's stories and you hear those things and you think that happened to them, but like, that won't happen to me, surely.
Right.
And then it does, or something novel you never even really considered. And there's just simply no way to prepare for those novelties. There is no way. And they're brutal. When they hit, it does. It hits you like a ton of bricks. And you just think, like, there's no way I can do this anymore. And then somehow, some way, you take some time and you put yourself back together and you go, no, I can do this again. Or at least for a lot of people. You know, everyone has their breaking point. But I wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I wasn't there yet.
I know that feeling. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I had this issue where I was out of days. I was out of Schengen zone days. So, like, you get to stay 90 days in the European Union every 180 days without a visa as an American. Okay. So I needed a visa at that point because I was planning on, this is like end of March. I'm like, I'm going back in May, but my days I wouldn't have enough to like June. I was like, I don't care. I'll get a visa. So I came home and I went to the consulate in Houston and got a Greek visa. Like I drove down there and got a visa for a year. and like was getting ready to go back. And all this time, I've not said this, but I was listening to your podcast.
Oh God.
It was in Greece. I probably listened to, I don't know, you know, I'm by myself all day long, 3 episodes a day.
Oh my God. How sick of my voice are you?
So sick. No, I'm just kidding. I listened to tons of episodes. There was on your podcast an
baby
ad.
Baby gotta eat, Ashton. Baby I gotta eat. Make that
That's
mental.
Right. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. There was an ad for an at-home insemination kit called Fertile. And I heard it a couple times and I'm just like, well, I'm way past that. Like, there's no way something like that would work for me, whatever. But when I came home between after cycle 4 with all those just bad cycles, one embryo in the freezer, one little bitty embryo, I just was getting kind of mad because I'm like, this can't be right that I have to just like sit out waiting for a visa. Like, this is crazy. What can I do? And at that point, like, I'm exercising. I'm trying to eat well. Like, on transfer day, I never eat French fries. Like, whatever. You know,
don't
all
strike me as the person that will just sit back and let things happen. You're like, I'm going to get this shit done. What else can I try?
Exactly. And so I hear this ad for Fertile and I hear it again and again and again. And I'm just like, there's no way that would work for me. There's no way. So I come back and I'm listening to the podcast some more and it keeps coming up. And I'm like, you know what? For a couple $100, as much money as I've spent, we could do it. Like, why not?
Oh my God. I love this, like a living testament that the ads work.
The ads work. So I bring it up to Grant and he is like, just super skeptical. He's like, no, this is not the dumbest thing he's ever heard of, but he's like,
can you explain to people who might not know what is it? And what about the ad like was made you think, oh, I should try that?
For sure. So
I'm doing market research slash interview.
Absolutely. So what actually really convinced me was that, well, a couple things. One, Jen is like a one woman show walking billboard for her own product, which I actually really
love. Jen, the founder.
Yes. Founder, creator, like this is her baby. And I had listened to her on your podcast. I heard that episode as well. And so I felt a little compelled by that. But again, I'm just like, I've done IVF. There's no way this can work. But the other thing I think that really got me was it is the only sterile at-home kit. And I thought a turkey, like you think like turkey baster, right? You think at-home insemination, like I could use something out of my kitchen.
Right.
But I'm like, I didn't know what it was about the sterility exactly. But I thought this could make a lot of sense. Like we're bypassing microbiome that maybe is super hostile, like who knows? And I knew at that point I was ovulating every month. There was not a question of that. So I'm like, let's give it a go. So
this Grant, is so exciting.
Grant was not enthusiastic.
No. What was his take?
He's like, do what you're going to do. I don't care. Like at this point, he's like, whatever. So the kit comes and it comes like a week before I'm supposed to ovulate. And it was a good time. Like I was so glad to be back and I was feeling, you know, just like happy to be back. We had a really nice wedding to go to that week. And I did not read the instructions with enough notice for Grant to like get the information of what we had to, he knew what we had to do, but like, I didn't even know that we had to like do it 3 times. So like the idea is you do it as you're surging at your peak and then after as well for the best chance. Like the kit came and I thought, oh, 3 syringes. Like there's 3 months of tries. No, you do them all in the same month. However, time comes for the first use. And I'm like, this is no big deal. I've done 8,000 scans. I've been through hell and back. I'm just like, this is nothing. This kit is like the least intrusive thing one can possibly imagine to try to maybe have an increased chance, whatever. So I give Grant the kit and give him the instructions. He knows what to do. And I just hear he is so mad in that bathroom. I mean, he drops one of the syringes, which is sterile. So we're not going to reuse it. So he throws away. He's like, there's $70, whatever. Like he is mad.
Oh my God.
He does not want to do it. And it was probably later at night than it should have been. Like he was probably trying to, I don't really remember, but like, he just wasn't in the headspace to be doing this. But I basically said, I don't care how you feel about this. Like we're going to do this.
Yeah.
We need to do it now.
Babe.
This is happening. So anyway,
Grant, make it work.
You can do it. Make it work. Exactly. Make it work. So long story short, he made it work on the second attempt and, you know, I used it at home, went to sleep and thought, well, that was fun, but we're never doing that again because Grant will never do this again. So instead of doing it 3 times, we did it once. And I just was like, I brushed it off and I was just like, okay, well, that was a waste, but it was only a couple $100s, like not thousands of dollars, like all this other stuff I've done, right?
Exactly. So it's a drop in the bucket compared to all the other stuff.
Totally. Yeah. And I don't know what the cost of a normal, like non-sterile insemination, like at home insemination kit is. It's probably quite a bit less, but in my mind, I'm like the sterility, like I want the sterility, like make this as medical as it can be.
Right.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
It did. So kind of felt nothing of it, or like thought nothing of it. Kind of didn't forget, but I'm just like, there's no way. Mm-hmm. So 2 weeks later, my period, albeit short, is like clockwork. And Monday came and went and there was nothing. And I thought, oh, that's weird. And so Tuesday came and went and there was nothing. And I thought, oh, that's weird. And then by Wednesday, I went, that's really weird. Okay.
Oh, so my God.
So we were on our
Is it the fertile at-home insemination kit?
I thought, there's no way. So by Wednesday, I told Grant, I was like, I don't want you to get your hopes up, but I just want to let you know my period's not here yet. And we just kind of did this at each other, which is me just like big-eyed, nodding our head. We didn't say anything. Uh-huh. We just kind of looked at each other. I'm like, okay. Uh-huh. And by Friday, I was like, I had no like physical symptoms. It was still very early, but I was like, I'm pregnant. And I'd never been pregnant ever. Not even to test. Never.
Yeah.
And so I went to Walmart and bought, I don't know, too many tests like most people do. Mm-hmm. And
did you buy like the variety, like the kind with the words and then the kind with just the lines and like?
Absolutely not. I bought the cheapest test possible.
Okay. Got it.
And I used that.
You're like, I've already poured enough money into this endeavor. Yeah, thank you very much.
And I think part of me still was like, there's no way. Like, maybe there's a way. It was the only hope I'd ever felt. But I also was like, there's no way. So came home and took a test. And I walked out of the bathroom in silence and just held it up. And we both just were like, oh, my God. And everyone's like, could it have been something else? No, I can confirm. It could not have been.
Oh, my God.
Natural conception. Yeah. Yeah.
That was absolutely wild. Okay. It so was when wild. Was this? And also, how many years had you been trying before this?
So that in total. Okay. So this was the end of April of 2025. So like the last week. And we had been trying, it would have been just shy of 2 years.
Okay. And how many cycles did you go through?
Four.
Four cycles.
Four failed cycles of, well, I mean, we do have the one embryo in Greece, but I mean, I would consider them, generally speaking, failed cycles of IVF.
Okay. So you still have the embryo in Greece. Okay. So you get this positive test and then tell me everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
were you scared?
No. I mean, I say no like that because like, I was shocked. I was like, there is just no way this stupid thing worked, honestly, like this piece of plastic. And it's what's funny is I had messaged Jen on Instagram and I was like, hey, before I bought it, I was like, hey, like, can you send me any like scientific paperwork or like anything for Grant? Like, he doesn't want to do this. And she is super busy. And we didn't really communicate about that beforehand. But the second I sent her a message about being pregnant, she was like, oh, my gosh. And I think that's when it like started to sink in, because at that point we hadn't. I do think we actually told a couple friends we were doing it because we thought it was hilarious. We're just and we like showed them, we're like, oh, here are the bags with like, here's what the syringe looks like. Like,
was it, was it easy? It sounds like it's pretty easy to use, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, aside from Grant dropping everything in the bathroom.
Yeah, for sure. No offense, no shade. But it was super easy to use. I mean, you got to be careful, but I mean, the kit comes with like a little collection cup and it comes with a large syringe, and you fill the cup with the sample and then you put it in, you suck it up in the syringe, and then your partner or whoever is, you know, helping in this endeavor just brings it to you, and that's that.
Oh,
do it yourself, or you can someone else do it to you. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was the end of April, and I told my sisters first a couple weeks later. And I mean, of course, anybody we have since told how this happened has just been like dumbfounded, because it doesn't make any, I mean, let's be real. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense that one could go from doing all this IVF with no success whatsoever to some one-off at home insemination kit.
It's so
and
cool,
nail it
though.
On the first
I'm
time.
So happy that that worked for you. It's wild. It's just wild.
It is totally wild. And even when I think on it now, I'm just like, I don't, I don't know that this story could get any more wild, from like being on two continents to like totally disrupting my life for IVF, making it basically my full-time job and basically torturing myself. Like, everyone's like, oh, Greece must have been so nice. No, it was not nice.
You're like, this is not a vacation, babe.
No, it was terrible to just come home and like just whoop and 5 seconds just all of a sudden be pregnant. It's
absolutely
wild.
Okay. So this was in April. And now here we are in the fall. Tell me, how are you feeling? Where are we at with everything?
I'm so good. Like, you know, like most people, the first trimester wasn't the most fun time of my life. And, you know, with being infertile, you just get paranoid about everything going wrong all the time. And there's been like little things here and there, like a cyst on the cord, but that went away. And like, I found out I have a clotting disorder. That was news to me. So, but these are not like major things. And right now I'm great. Like, I'm 29 weeks today and I mean, like, I could, whatever, I'm good. Still going to the gym, feeling good, working full time.
You're glowing. Your hair looks incredible.
Listen, the hair,
it
the nails
really
haven't
does.
The nails haven't come in, but the hair has come in.
The hair is giving.
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh. Okay. And then I know you did reach out to Jen from Fertile to tell her about the success story. What? Tell me about that.
Jen is the best. She's like, I don't know her in real life, obviously, but she feels like the ultimate wing woman. Like,
she totally is.
She's so cool. Even the way she texts, it's just like, it's emojis, it's excitement, it's like pictures of her. Like, I don't know. She's just great. Yeah. But she's just been wonderful. Just, I mean, from the second she found out we were expecting, of course, like, she's so excited. Like, this is her baby and it's her product. And I don't know how many Fertile babies there have been. Or
Jen was calling the first Infertile AF / Fertile collab because you had listened to the pod. And then so I love it.
Yeah. So Jen's been awesome, just super supportive. And what's funny about this whole thing is that, and like in my real life, like in like real person-to-person interactions, I'm pretty much an open book with people, but I have said nothing online about infertility, about trying to have a family, about being in Greece. Like, I didn't make anything apparent, I guess, to the world. And then about being pregnant. So this is kind of like a hard launch of everything that's happened in the last, 2 years, which is,
I feel so honored. Hard launch on the pod.
I know. Like, we might as well. So this is kind of fulfilling my dream of having the baby in secrecy in Australia.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Please join us at Rally Live number 10. It's on November 14th. Like I said in the intro, you don't have to come live, but if you do, you get to be a part of our chats and our live giveaways, and our happy hour at the end of the day. But even if you can't come that day, we have so many great talks. We have a keynote with Sarah Herron. We have two panels, one's on surrogacy and one is an Ask an REI Anything panel. We have 8 breakout sessions and we have a swag bag for you, and you have 30 days to watch all of the talks. So check it out. We would love to have you and support you and give you all this really great programming. Also, check out the work of art books at my website, which is infertileafgroup.com. We have the OG work of art. We have Beautiful Bird and the new board book, which comes out next week. I will have the copies, so it's going to be available for pre-order very soon. It's called You Are a Work of Art, and it's for all kiddos born through assisted reproductive technology. It's so cute. I'm really proud of it. And thank you guys so much for supporting the books. Also, if you are looking for a support group and a safe place to land, come join us at Fertility Rally. We have virtual support groups. We have IRL events. We have virtual events, including Fertility Rally Live that I was just talking about. But the support groups are great. I host one every Wednesday night with Blair. We also have them on Mondays and Sundays at various times. So whatever works for you. If you're not yet a member, but you want to check out a group, just shoot me a DM at InfertileAFStories or at Fertility Rally, and we can hook you up. All right, guys. Thanks again for listening. I love you all. I hope you have a great day.